Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
8:50 Central African time, at the time of the morning where we join Ahmed Barak on his segment, A Straight Talk with Ahmed. Ahmed, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Tell me, how are you doing this Sunday morning?
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alan and salam to all our radio listeners. Alhamdulillah, Allah blessed us with another fine Sunday morning Shabbat.
Now, I want to know, Ahmed, tell me, how the year flew? I can't believe it. We're already in December. Can you believe it, Ahmed? You're like blinking your eyes year upon year, year upon year. What's going on, Ahmed?
I couldn't believe it myself the other day, 1st of November. It was, what, 2 years in council for me. I just couldn't believe it. 2 years went away so fast, and I got another three years for my term of office. So I just couldn't believe it. You know how the time is flying at the moment.
Yeah, your brother Baiki Rekin Al Ahmed, why you didn't give us mitai and puri patta and sauce when you celebrated your 2 years? What happened, Ahmed?
Hey, Shabbat, you know, there's no time at the moment. You know, the time is flying so fast, we don't even know when which day it is at the week at the moment. That's how bad it is.
Well, latest on Kafan Dafan, people asking for blood and this and that. What's your views and what's your thoughts thus far, Ahmed?
But Shabbat, there's a huge shortage of blood at the blood bank at the moment. They're encouraging people in various shopping centers to come and assist them to give blood. So, you know, with the silly season around the corner, so obviously they'll be needing blood, especially the hospitals and trauma units, and all the hospitals will be looking for blood. So that is a very scary part at the moment. But the ads have been gone out, and somehow the other somehow we manage every year to get blood from. I don't know how. And yesterday I was reading the paper, and I saw 78 years old person for he has given 450 liters of blood over the period of so many years, you know, and some gave 255. So people are there giving regular blood on a yearly basis. So, you know, so alhamdulillah, Allah make it easy. You know, somehow the other, some way, somehow Allah make it easy.
Hey, Ahmed, the only fear I got, I don't mind giving the blood, is that I don't like needles in my hands and all that. What about you?
Shabbat, you know, sometimes, you know, you have to put that needle through, then only you have to do it. Today, everything is with needles today. That is the issue we face with. So, a lot of people I know, they don't like needles and all that. So, and they take medication. So, that's where we are at the moment.
As Ahmed said, hey, needles and pins, I don't know, people. But for me, I can't think of going, hey, putting the needle in and sitting there for half an hour. Hey, let me check where your veins are and all that. Well, as we move on, I'm looking at a message here. It says, Assalamu alaikum, Councillor Ahmed Barak. I have a very sad story to tell you. Many of our families have moved overseas, and we have left our Kabristan and left our loved ones in the Kabristan. No one to attend. So in some cases, the whole family is overseas. What can we do about this, Ahmed? I know the Muslims in South Africa already care, but now I want to know, can we make a deal with the Muslim burial societies to take care of our parents' qabr, or every Friday send someone to read at the qabr? Ahmed, this is a very probing question. How do you respond to that?
Firstly, Shabbat, two folds to that question. Number one, I'm not sure if the brother is pertaining to a private grave, or is he just talking about that he is no longer here in the country, that doesn't have a grave, but his loved ones are buried in our cemeteries here in South Africa. He needs somebody to go and make dua. So depending on where the person, his family is buried. So obviously, based on that, we can speak to IBC to say, you know what, if it is under the control of IBC, where the 14 cemeteries are under the control of Islamic Burial Council, they will be able to assist him. But if it's outside the parameters of IBC, if it's Hilal, Flower Road, Dayal Road, or the Sufi at Riverside, or at 45th, then it's a different issue, because they don't have control over those cemeteries, because it is strictly private cemetery owned by that trust, unlike the Itigwini municipality, where we are just the custodians of that cemetery. So, that question he needs to answer, where the deceased are buried, number one. Number two, if he's privately owned, if he owns the grave in one of these cemeteries, then it's a different issue. Then we'll be able to answer his question.
No, that's a good point indeed, Ahmed. And, surely those that are buried, and alhamdulillah, when you go to the Kabristan and you notice that most of the private cemeteries too are very well kept, Ahmed, and, good care being taken of. So in other words, the private cemetery, you'll get the same families, burying in that cemetery, Ahmed.
That's correct, Shafat. You see, what happened in the older days, that what they did was, if you got like 44, they made the masjid and they made the madrasa, and after that they also put up a cemetery there. And this is what we are saying in every now. Yesterday I was in a meeting with Salim Qazi as well, and in Anda they're looking for there's a masjid there, adjourning the masjid. There's a ground there which there will be IBC is going to make an application by the Indunas there. And take that and turn it into a cemetery. And then I advise Salim that, you can't just take from the Indunas or take this land from Joe Block or whoever. First, you have to follow the process. The process is very lengthy process because you'll have to do geotech. You'll have to do soil content. You'll see the water seepage. All that has to be taken into account before they approve it. Because even I had an incident where where was it? This was a cemetery in Madrasa in Campertown, and then the Ustad, the Molana, was there. That he said, anything happens to him, they must open a section of the land there in the masjid where the Madrasa is to make it for Molana Madni. It was, and then we turned a small section for him. And we buried it. And you won't believe it, after a month and a half, 2 months, I was called up. How did you manage to bury so-and-so in that mosque? This thing. Show me some paperwork that was put into place before you did your geotech and all. Fortunately, I just made the application, but all the process didn't take place. I said, unfortunately, and when I had to go to Marisburg and answer this question, I said, we put everything in place. And fortunately, in my case, I had, all the service providers, the architect, what the plan and everything I had. So I said, everything is in place. It just was a matter of getting it approved. But unfortunately, the person passed away before everything could be done. And one of his wishes was that he must be buried in his own facility where he has been teaching for the last 20 odd years. So that was the issue. So alhamdulillah, we managed to sort it out so far.
And has that place become a Kabristan now where Mulana Rahimullah is buried?
It is in the madrasa and it is barricaded. The rule is, Islamic rule is that any cemetery, whether you take it next to a non-Muslim or Christian organization, the rule is Sharia law is it must be barricaded to tell the community this is the Muslim section of the cemetery.
Jazakallah for sharing the story. I wonder how many knew the story, Ahmed. But you're a man of many things that you do. Quietly, not telling everyone. This message says, Assalamu alaikum, Ahmed Parak and Blue Chef. A great segment indeed. May I ask, Ahmed, what's the going price for a kabar? I got some bucks now. Ahmed?
Shafa, depending where he's going to be wanted. So if you go to 44, in most cases, they're not selling at the moment because, because in terms of the recycle process and everything. But if you can go to like Riverside, they might have some grace there. If you can speak to Islamic Burial Council, Salim, they won't sell it on an outright basis, but they'll give you a long-term lease, 15-year lease, and then you'll be able to renew it again. So they especially in Bashapir, you might be able to get there. You might be able to get in Dial Road. No, Dial Road is not selling to anybody. Flower Road are doing, Riverside is doing it. So, you know, for us, for the next 10, 12 years, Shafat, alhamdulillah, in KZN, we shouldn't worry about cemetery space or anything like that in terms of our recycling method. We don't have a problem. Alhamdulillah, Allah blessed us. And fortunately, in 1998, when I became the chairman of the Islamic Burial Council, that's one of the things that we did, was take over the cemetery away from the Itigwini municipality, all our Muslim section. And you saw what we did it in the last 25 years when I was there. We turned all these cemeteries into like a park. We made it. Shafat, it must be, when you go there, you must feel that, you know what, it looks neat. It's not a jungle where you put your loved ones and you just walked away from it. You know, you must be able to go there. You must be able to see all the other covers there and pray for not only for your deceased family, for all the other marhums there as well. So this is what. And when we took over from the Itigwini municipality, then, you know, at that time, the elders were, hey, you are against the idea of we taking it over. He says, when the council is running it, there's no problem. Why should we take it? But they didn't realize there was a problem at that time, because at 4 o'clock, there was a cutoff time. Because if you don't go before 4 into and go and book that grave in Brook Street, you have to wait the next day. So, and only when you went on time and you paid, then only you were allowed to bury for like before 7 o'clock or so, because then you had to go drop the worker back at Chatsworth or Phoenix, wherever he stayed, because all, mainly Indian workers were there at that time. So when we took it over, they were coming at me very, very hard. They said, no, you want to take it. Why? What's going to be the benefit for the community? Look at the benefit today. We are in control of ourselves, the cemetery. Number two, we can bury 1 o'clock in the morning. We don't have issues. We don't have problems when we go in and bury in any one of our cemeteries and look at the influx of the foreign nationals that year. If we didn't take one scenario, Shafat, in Red Hill, we had 1,500 graves there. And in terms of our recycling method, at that time, the council found we only have used maybe about 30 or 40 in from the 1,500. They're saying, you know what, we'll give you the 500 and we're taking over the 1,000. I fought and I said, no way. It is earmarked for the Muslim community. We fenced it up immediately and we made sure that they left the 1,500. And then I started telling the community, bury more and more people in Red Hill, just to show them that, you know what, we're using it. So what we were doing, when we did it in block form, we put 1 year in block A, then we put in block Z, we put in block C, we put in block F, just to show that these people are buried in the whole cemetery, so they can't take it away. Because if you left the cemetery only on one block and you haven't used the other block, they could have taken the other blocks away. But by putting everybody in different blocks from A to Z, they can't take it away, because in terms of the law, you're not allowed to take the take the body, and you'll have to put it into another cemetery. You'll have to then go and bring court order and everything. So I found that loophole there. That's why I even put in every single block, so they won't be able to do that. You see, Shafat, they have put before the city mayor, the city mayor, the city manager, the speaker of the council. They don't know where to turn, Shafat. We have bombarded them with all the corruption that they're just, unfortunately, we have got people on the ground are giving us proper information to clean this whole city up, Shafat. The rot is not also with the councillors or with the councillors. The rot is inside the city where the administration is taking place. They got their own people, their own comrades are running the city from the inside. They are causing more problems for us than anything else. So to clean the city up, you have to start cleaning from each department. from the head of department where they cannot do their work, they should be shipped out and start putting new blood there, new people there, bring the old engineers, bring the old architects, bring the right people who knew how to run the city, and that's what we have to do. And I'm telling you, Shafat, we can get the city up and running. Within a year, 18 months, we'll have the city back into number 3 or 4 in the world. It has got everything. It's got the people. It's got the infrastructure. We just have to start working towards that, making sure the monies are being channeled in the right departments, right places where the infrastructure can take place, Shafat.
You know, Ahmed, we've been told that the mafias are running everything with the cahoots with the government officials and so forth. With construction mafia, you've got the taxi mafia, you name them all over. You have different types of conglomerates coming through, even the harbors and the airports. Everything have been compromised. If you're going to clean up Itikweni, but will the mafias really allow you to do this? Or they, you know, they'll start making, or they'll have militias, you know, making it impossible to run our metros. What's your thoughts on that, Ahmed?
Shafat, you know, you want to take out a tree. When you take the tree out, and then what, you put poison in it, the tree do not grow again. It's the same thing in council. You start cleaning up. When you take that link, where that mafia link is, you cut that root off completely, and then you'll find that he has got no access to the information in what is happening in council, so you won't be able to get the information for him to run his operation anymore. So that's the only way it can work, Shafat.
Looking at this message, you said, Assalamu alaikum, Ahmed Parak. One thing I must tell you, you make me happy when I listen to you, especially when you talk about those people that come from overseas and run amok in our country, and they do it with so impunity. They even smile on your face when you take them on, and they say, if you don't watch it, we'll put you away too. Ahmed, what can we do when people talk like this to us with a smile on the face, and they say, beware, we are mafias and we can put you away. You know me, got no document. Me can kill. Ahmed, this is what I'm hearing all the time. Please, Ahmed, get Itikweni to do something. Perhaps they even have bought out Beki. Ahmed, how you respond to that?
Firstly, they must, you know, that me say can kill, me can do this, me can do that. They can do it. Absolutely nothing, Shafat. They only threaten, they just come and threaten, but they cannot do anything, number one. Number two, the Home Affairs has been, now the legislation is being in the process of getting changed in the new year. In February, the new legislation will come into effect. So all undocumented people are living, foreign nationals, they will be given 30 days or 14 days to leave the country. And if they don't leave the country, then we know, because we are asking for all from 1994. They must come up with all the papers. We want to verify. Once it's been verified, whether it was done legally, illegally, we will pick all that up, because the systems are put in place. Even in our own Tikwini, the new billing system has been put into place. All that freebies and all, where they're picking electricity from Joe Bloggs' house and all that was going to be stopped in the new year. So the road they're traveling is getting narrow on them. So end of the day, I say to anyone, there is concession. You can go to the Home Affairs and get asylum because of the problem that you face in your own country. You can get asylum documents, but people they don't want to. They just want to go and buy things. And you saw what happened recently. The guy was printing IDs from his flat at home, and he had the machine identical to the one that we use in Home Affairs. So, and who it was? It was one of the EFF members, and all this has come to an end now. So they're moving at a very rapid speed at the moment, because at the moment, if you look at it, the foreigners are making more money than the locals, and the unemployment has rocketed up to 48%. How are you going to sustain the country when they come and earn here, they don't pay taxes? Whatever they earn here, they only pay for the accommodation and food. The rest of the money is going to the homeland. So what happens to us? How are we going to get our own infrastructure in place, Shafat?
Looking at this message, it says, yeah, Qassam, I can tell you, Ahmed Bhai, that you are already talking. I want you to come visit me one day. I'm going to get your number from Shafat Bhai. I want to show you by my place how many of these people are living in all the flats. They have 10, 20 cars. They're living there. They make noise in the morning and the evening. 20 of them get in one van and drive in and out. Who to blame, Ahmed Bhai? It is the landlords. They're allowing the shaitans to come play fools in this country. They're making money with all the criminals. Please, Ahmed Bhai, when can I come and get you to come to my place to see the tamasha? Ahmed?
Shafad, please give him my number. Let him come, and then we'll write for on his behalf to the Home Affairs, and then we report this matter, and then we report this matter to the city police as well, and then he will get some relief from that area. They will clean up. If they are undocumented, they'll have to leave, and then they'll be detained. So that's the only thing we can do. If he's properly documented, he can stay there, but he can't stay in one flat, 20 of them staying, or three, 8 or 12, I can, one two-bedroom flat, you can't put 12 people there. So all that we can help that brother. So that's the only thing we can do at this stage of it.
Yeah, Ahmed, you know, the sad part is that if you really look at this, there's officials also involved. They know exactly what's going on. These people are paying the taxes. They know where they have their businesses. I mean, and they're driving out. And perhaps, you know, the law enforcement can see all this, but they turn a blind eye because they may be getting quite a hefty packet at end of the month. Ahmed, your thoughts?
Shabbat, everyone in the police department, staffs, metro police, every government entity, Home Affairs, you take any department in the country, they're all taking the bribes today. So by taking bribe, now you became an accomplice to the transaction. So these guys should be brought to book. And this is where we have now written up with the action essay we wrote to the Minister of Justice, and to give them the penalty where they were being 8 years sentence. Now we told them to give them maximum sentence of 15 years. So this is what is happening at the moment. And you can see recently how many fraudulent transactions that took place in the city. They all got suspended, and we have already charged it. And in fact, with any issues that any fraudulent things are taking in the city, we have reported. You saw what we have been recently with the Women's League, the ANC Women's League at ICC. They booked it, and they wanted the city to pay the $5 million. We put a stop to that. There was the summer games that was taking place from next week onward for $28 million. We stopped that as well. So we have already taken the raw sewage that is going through the rivers to the sea. We have already stopped that. We in high court already. So we're moving at the space. Yet we are only four councillors in the city. Yet they got the other opposition parties got like 54. The EFF got 22. The IFP got 23 or whatever they have got. Now, we have only four councillors, but we're making an impact in the council, and we're taking them full head on every item they bring before the council. We read it, we check it, we get legal opinion, and we go for it.
Yeah, I'm looking at a lot of messages. Let's do that one there, Boniface. Yeah, it says, Assalamu alaikum, Ahmed Parak. I want to confess to you, I know that I did wrong. I bribed the building inspectors many years ago. Now I live in a gabrat mode. I know that they will ask me to demolish my building because I'm virtually on the road verges. And I know who will be picking up the rubbles. Must I even pay for demolishing and picking up rubbles and getting it dumped at the dump site? Ahmed, how do you respond to that brother there?
If it's coming from his property, Shafat, that rubble cannot be put on the road or in the pavement, he has to go and take it in the dump site and go and dump it. It won't cost him much. Just under 100 rand you'll go and put. There's a special container there which he can put the rubbles in it. If he's got any cardboard, there's cardboard container. There's other normal refuse there for garden refuse. So they've got different containers for different items. So he can go and put it there because you don't expect the council to come and pick that. He's building materials or anything like that. They won't do it. And if he has bribed somebody and he has put his plans through and used, instead of giving the 3 meter allowance around his house and he used it bare maximum, then obviously he must go and apply now for a special consent that he have already done it. So by doing it now is better for him, because once they come to him with the new system we put in council, we have got a dome we don't even have to come to your house and we can pick it up. If you you extended your house or whatever you did, we'll be able to pick it up. And there's a hefty fine and you'll have to bring that section of your house down.
Yeah, Maja, so the people are under surveillance and there's a pass up. Others get in touch with Councillor Ahmed Farooq. He will give you the advice of what to do and what not to do. This message that says, Ahmed, what about the water situation? I notice that the sewage system is cooling down now. No more smells and overload. Have you all done something right? And secondly, the Durban beachfront. Yeah, it is. You are right. It's still stinking and smelling. And the color is different. But some people are addicted to polluted waters. Ahmed, your comments.
As far as the beaches are concerned, we opened as of this week. There's 24 beaches has been opened, but in terms of the water content, they still have sent it to the lab. We are not happy, so maybe some of the beaches will have to be closed till that matter is being resolved. That's one. As far as the sewer issue is concerned, that we have now put in additional pumps in our pumping stations. There is new systems that we put in place, but your problem is the pipes that from your home to the pump station, that's where our problem, that there's still a blockage. You will find occasionally that thing will overflow and you're going to have the thing coming back into operation, but you cannot have that. Once we start servicing from one side, then only this matter will be resolved. And furthermore, these pipes we're putting in the apartheid time, now, these were asbestos pipes. Now, the new pipes, we put in plastic pipes. So, obviously, it's going to take some time, but it will come right in the near future, Shabbat.
Well, Fayyaz says, Assalamu alaikum. It has been 25 years since I've been to this country. I'm back. But, Ahmed, I want to know how easy and accessible is the Durban Harbour. Remember, in my 90 days, going there to the terminal and even fishing at Maiden Wharf. Is it accessible or is it all restricted areas? Ahmed, how you respond to Fayyaz?
So, Shafat, Fayyaz's question is they have now barricaded most of the areas for security purposes. Some areas you can go. If you go to Wilson Wharf, there is an area where you'll be able to do fishing. But mainly in the harbour section, there is no go at the moment because of security reasons. They have closed it up completely.
Now, Ahmed, I believe that a section of the harbour has been sold to certain companies and certain individuals or certain conglomerates. Who are the major buyers of these different portions of the harbour?
Shafat, first and foremost, number one, you've got MEC. They have put in something like $19 million to assist the council in putting up the building that was now, you saw that a year ago, it was opened for the passenger terminal for cruise lines there. That's been partly sponsored. But we are still looking into how that $19 million was spent and where did it come, and we need to know which coffers that money went to. So that is one of the investigations we're doing at the moment. The second issue is China has put in a lot of money in terms of upgrading the harbor. Now, you know, Chinese, what they do, Shafat, they give you unlimited resource in funding. But when you stop paying them back, what they do is they take over your harbor, they take over your airport, and they control the whole market. So this government need to be careful what they are doing. Yes, they have started investing to upgrade, and the Chinese know how to run harbors and airports and all. They are masters. They know the game, how it works, how many ships can come an hour, how many containers can be offloaded in an hour. All that information we have already got. But we have to be wary. The money they're putting in here, and it's safe, God forbid, and we cannot pay them back. What happens then?
That's a big story, Ahmed. And as you notice, any idea why so many China malls are being burnt, Ahmed?
Shafat, most of the China malls, you know, they do illegal connections and all that. That's where the problem is. You know, the Chinese, they do some weird things and all. That's the problem. And that's where, even in all the jandals, the informal settlements and all that, they got the taking power from here, there and all that, and they leave it there. They're illegal. You'll find some child has got shocked and died because of that. So these are the things that we have a problem. And if you're getting three-phase power into a massive mall, and if you do not know how to connect those wires, and you go and do something, and then you leave it, and you say, no, it's done, and then that catches a light, the whole mall gets burned. This is the problem.
So those are one of the factors that's causing all the fires. This message here says, Assalamu alaikum, my name is Firoz, and I'd like to know from Ahmad Tariq, what about a point road that now has a very powerful name like Mahatma Gandhi Boulevard? When are they going to upgrade? I still see the old Seafarers Club still a dungeon. I still see those buildings around them all like rat-infested places. It's a shame that so many years later, they have done absolutely nothing. Only talk, and more talk. How you respond to Firoz there, Ahmad?
Shabbat, Firoz is 100% right. An agreement was tied down 3 to 4 years ago with a Moroccan company. They were supposed to have spent in like $30 billion to upgrade the which we call the Point Waterfront. It didn't materialize. And up till now, and one of the clauses was that whatever buildings or any plot, if you put up a office block there or you put a block of flats, they still get a percentage of that. I had a look at these documents about a month ago, and a state agent came to me and he wanted some clearance certificate. So when I looked at this, I said, funny, these guys haven't put up the $30 billion which they promised. Secondly, he's asking for clearance certificate and he still gets paid for not putting any money into the in our coffers. So how that is possible? So we are taking this matter up as well. So when we took this matter up, you won't believe it, portion of the agreement was cancelled immediately because now they know we caught up with this, what was happening. So there was some people in the council and in real estate and all was fiddling with this whole thing here. So I think what we want to do is cancel the entire deal. And there's plenty of people from abroad who want to come and invest in our country. You know, Shapat, you won't believe it. At the moment, things are so quiet in the industry, in major shopping centers, and all, you'll find the percentage are down by 25% to 30%. Sales are down as well. But yet you're finding, we had in the last 2 months international companies investing in our country. Now, when you ask that question, how come the things are so bad? There is no water, there is no light, there's problem with government, there's problem all over in this country. Why are you investing? So they say to us, when the chips are down, this is an opportunity for them to invest because they know after the 24 election, things
want to
come right in this country.
Yeah, there's optimism there. Looking at this message here, it says, Ahmad Aparak, for obvious reasons, I'd like to stay anonymous. There are certain individuals that were robbing the Itikweni municipality. They were caught and they were fired. But these individuals have found a niche and a market in other organizations in the Muslim community and are acting as big boys there, but they are chores in disguise. Shouldn't we name and shame them? Please, Ahmad, this is too sad, but we allow this to happen in our community. How do you respond to Anonymous there, Ahmad?
See, Shafat, sometimes to what we do in government, we got intelligence. You know, we in council, we got intelligence. The government has intelligence. So we let them write. Because to attack the problem sometimes at the very, very beginning, it can create a big ripple effect for the council, for the government and everything. So you let it ride for a couple of months or maybe a year because the intelligence are on top of the game there. They're checking every move, who it is. And when they get down to it, he's bound to make a mistake. And that's when they pounce on him. When you make a mistake, that's when they pounce on him. And that's where we get all the information, who those guys are, how it flowed, and all that. So sometimes you find that, like when I fought that clothing industry case in the country, the one of the biggest clothing cases in the country and one of the biggest law firms in the country, Weber Wenzel in Cape Town, when we fought this case here, we took on the Department of Labor, Bargaining Council, Trade Union, and the Minister of Minister of Trade Union and the Bargaining Council as well. The issue here was when we took them on, we had a senior counsel, a SILC, by the name of Leslie Stewart. And he told us, when you want to attack somebody, do not attack him on the first day when you read a report coming on the press that United Clothing and Textile are doing this, that. You don't do it. Suck to the union was coming at us. So don't respond. Just leave it. Let it lie for a week, 2 weeks, maybe a month, too. Then you respond. You analyze that whole article properly, and then you give your answers. And 9 out of 10, that's what you use in court. It makes a big difference. So we learned from this as well that, you know, the intelligence, they know how to play this game and what to do and how to catch them. It takes sometimes year, maybe year and a half, but they let it ride because they want proper information. Because the SAPS and the government officials, they're all cowards in this whole transaction.
I know what you're saying, Ahmed. So you need to be thorough, and you have to differentiate from the boys to the men, and from the honest to the dishonest. Ahmed, a really great chat on your segment of Straight Talk. Perhaps your parting word this morning?
Shafat, simple. Lots of issues are on the ground, but one of the issues, the main issue that our people are suffering in terms of electricity and light and water. My suggestion is you got till the 31st of December. There's so much of benefits have been placed by the Itigwini Municipality, the Revenue Service. If you cannot afford to pay your electricity, you got a system where you can go there. They will write off your debt by 15%, and you'll get 24 months to pay. That's one. If you have been caught up with the with COVID, from then you have lost your job, they can write off. For the first year and a half, they will be able to write off completely. Then your rates, you got exemption. If you're an NPO, NGO, NCP company, non-profit company, and if you properly registered with SARS and you got all your paperwork in place, you are also being given 50% of your light and water on a monthly basis. So these are the benefits are put in place. We have got, Shafat, and I was speaking to the head of Treasury on Thursday. We have got, you won't believe it, we've got 9 million 800 and something registered payers of your electricity and water. But only 1% have applied for the concession. So when the concession is there, yet other communities are coming, but we are not coming to take advantage of this, Shafat. This is my plea. If you got a problem, go now. And if you're a pensioner, there's a pension rate for you. And if you cannot afford it completely, there's a write-off for you as well, as long as you put your paperwork in place.
No, Jazakallah for that, Ahmed. Really great, as I said, having you on your segment, Straight Talk, a benefit to the Ummah and all. You have a, mashallah, beautiful day ahead. We'll talk to you soon. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.